on Triple J.
G'day!
G'day!
And welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for choosing this podcast. And you did make the right choice because you're going to hear from, well, amazing guests like this one. Yeah, we missed the first date with Matt Corby that we had locked in. He called in sick, but the second date was just as sweet.
It was worth the wait.
Yeah, I went to Matt Corby's live show and it was pretty incredible. So jazzy. He was scuba-doo-wop-wopping around everywhere.
You'll hear him scuba-doo-wop-wopping on this podcast, including a moment where he's reunited with a member of his high school music class, which is beautiful. Because Veronica and I were in a high school band together,
weren't
we?
Yeah.
We reunite every day, but also neither of us ever got successful at music, so it's less fun.
It's not too late. I still see us doing a flute-saxophone duet at some point.
Stop it.
We also heard from Ballpark Music. It's been a little while since they've talked to us about new music, but they've been quite busy working on a new sort of sound and doing some shows at the moment, so it was good to check in with them.
Also, if you ever wanted to look back at yourself as a 14-year-old and feel completely useless and insignificant, then get excited because you're going to meet Jade Hameister, who has just trekked. She's been the youngest person in the world to trek to the North Pole. And she's going to go to the South Pole, and then she's going to do one of these Greenland things, and she's going to be one of the first and youngest people to ever do the Arctic hat trick.
And she nearly had a photo with Rod Stewart.
On that, and you'll be very disappointed to hear the result of that story when you keep listening.
But speaking of not being disappointed, though, how about me predicting the man double braid at Groovin' the Moo?
It's hard to know whether your prediction was accurate or whether people just did it because they heard you talking about it and thought it would be funny.
Oh, yeah.
But there's only a few.
Or if it's just if you say anything could be a trend that's up and coming, like men wearing nappies at festivals or something. And
you
then
can
there's probably,
find one.
Yeah, there's one. And yeah. Then you go, oh, it's on the rise.
Yeah, you also hear from Anne Edmonds. We'll ask probably the most important question of all time about batteries. You don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
It's a big one. It was a big question. Don't you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a cracker?
Oh, was it a cracker?
You'll find out about it on this podcast. Have a good one.
Ballpark Music, It's Nice to Be Alive. And a text just came in from Sammy in Melbourne saying, this song always makes me think of when they played it at Splendour in 2014. It was the greatest moment, all my favourite people and so much love. I couldn't listen to it without happy crying for at least 18 months. Everything's changed now and people have broken up and moved internationally, but it still makes me smile.
Oh, that's so nice.
And we are joined in the studio by Ballpark Music, Sam and Jen. Hello.
Hello-ish.
It really makes you believe, though, that if there was like a Secret Life of Us of now, maybe that song would have been the anthem of it.
You can only hope.
Oh, man.
It's been such an exciting week for everyone, knowing that there's more Ballpark Music coming. We heard this, Pariah, which you released on Facebook. So fun, with like a really sort of psychedelic-y video. Noticing you guys were saying that you always wanted to make a song like this. Why was that? What did you mean by that?
I think, weirdly enough, when like we weren't really much of a jam band when we first started, and I think at some point we'd just done so much touring and, you know, we just had done literally hundreds of shows playing the same stuff, and it just started to get a bit boring. And without really planning it, we started to just improvise a lot more on stage. And then it became a real favorite kind of thing for us to do. So now at every show, we've always had some long, you know, improvised sections. And we just love doing it so much that, you know, in making this record all the time, we're like, we've got to have, you know, a bit like that in our record. We can't, you know, suddenly get to the end of making a record again and be like, damn it, we should have done something wild like that. Mm. Let's, you know, commit to doing it this time.
We had Thundercat, the bass player and amazing singer Thundercat, in earlier this year, and he was talking about how he just loves to go and do jams and see jams. We were like, what's the longest jam you've ever been in, Thundercat? And he was like, I don't know, maybe 6 hours?
Like, oh, that's a big fella.
Wow. Well,
In making Pariah, I think that we ended up jamming for nearly 3 hours.
That's enough.
Funnily enough, we used the very first take that we did on the finished version. But after that, there was, you know, 2 hours or so of tape of us jamming, and I cried at the end. I was so exhausted.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you are just rolling record on an entire session like that.
Exactly.
And then so who will listen back and decide what was good or not?
Some poor soul.
Oh, my God, why'd I let it go on this long?
So you just improv the whole thing, or did you sort of have a plan for it?
It began as like an improv thing, and most of it is improvised. We just like had one loose little structure thing. I think it sort of builds for a bit, and then it all kind of comes to a bit of a climax in the middle and drops out to just Jen's like fuzz bass for a bit. That was the only bit where we're like, "That let's rise," and then we'll cut back there.
When we get to that point, you can just go for it.
And then we'll just rise again and like
Ballpark
Phoenix.
Rises again.
That's the name of the album, officially.
Yeah. Ballpark Rises Again.
So what is it, an indication of what the rest of the album will sound like?
Not necessarily. No. There's a few bits like that.
Yeah, it's a very varied album, I think. It's not really one thing or, I don't know.
But Pariah is certainly like the jam song.
Yes. No. There's no other 7-minute jams in there, unfortunately.
And it's locked? You guys it's finished? It's done? No. It's ready to go?
Nearly.
Okay. Well, lots of people excited to hear new Ballpark music. We want to put on a song in a second. No one's more excited than you, Molly, for a weird reason. Tell us why you need to know the name of a new Ballpark music song.
Hey, guys. Basically, since the albums have come out, I've made all my account passwords, like, that every time I make a password, it's a Ballpark music song.
Good choice.
It's just made it easier to remember. Like, if I forget it, it's a limited amount of possibility, except it gets a bit harder every time an album comes out.
Yeah, okay.
Tell me you add, like, a couple of capitals or a few numbers or something.
You got to.
Yeah.
But the number one, like every single person.
Thanks, Molly.
Well, we do want to put on the new song now. Can you tell us the name of it and what the idea of it was?
Yes.
So the new song is called Nihilist Party Anthem, and it's great.
You kind of talk about it as like the antithesis of It's Nice to Be Alive. Is that right?
Yeah, well... I kind of wanted to call the album It's Not Nice to Be Alive for a little bit. I don't know. Just,
can we?
It's yeah, so dark, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not... I don't know what to say. I don't actually feel that dark about it. I just like writing really dark stuff, but I'm actually quite a smiley person, you know?
Mm. It's not really a personal feeling. It's just a realization.
But everyone goes through real nihil. I feel like people have nihilist phases. Even if you're happy, you can have a bit of a like, well, it's all for nothing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I kind of stumbled one of the inspirations for this song was I was actually doing some work in New York at the end of last year just by myself for another project thing. And I was by myself one afternoon and I did get really flat and I stumbled upon this page on Facebook called Nihilist Memes. And I don't know if you've seen it, but it's the best.
Tremendous. Yeah, it's really strong.
Yeah, now it's pretty much the only thing in my newsfeed and every day just me and, you know, the band and my friends are just sharing those memes. And they are really kind of, cynical and awful, but it's awesome. Yeah.
Well, with Sam and Jen from Ballpark Music, this is brand new music from the band, Nihilist Party Anthem. Let us know what you think. 0439 75 7555 from Triple J.
There it is. Brand new music from Ballpark Music. It's called Nihilist Party Anthem. And if you are heading along to Splendor in the Grass or a couple of shows that they're doing over the next little while, you'll be hearing that, and I'm sure a whole lot more new music too. And so much love coming in for that. Matt in Newcastle said, I'm waiting in the car to go to the gym, but I don't want to leave. Someone said, this is jamming my socks off so much, my feet are sticky.
Yuck.
It's gross, but full of love. And we have Sam and Jen from Ballpark Music in with us right now. Oh, so it's pretty, you were saying you were very nervous because this is sort of, a big step for you. You're saying, Jen, that this feels like a really different album, maybe more different than previously.
Yeah, I think that we were all way more excited and nervous about releasing these new songs than we have been in a really long time. I don't know, are you the same, Sam? I guess, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we were all ridiculously excited.
Is it because the process was different?
With, being nervous.
Yeah, the process is really different for this one. I kept saying many times, like, this is the album that we always should have made.
Yeah.
I feel like in many ways it's, you know, the summation of all our strengths and all the stuff we've learned on the past three albums. I think the first album has a kind of innocence to it. You know, we were pretty young and just like really excited, kind of little puppy dogs recording whatever, not really thinking about where it, you know, fitted in. And then Museum was a real kind of backlash against the first album for us. And I think there's a real stubbornness and kind of sincerity on the writing on Museum. And then Puddinghead was the first time we produced ourselves and explored a lot more about what we could achieve sound-wise as a band. And then, you know, we sort of took all those elements on this one and threw them all in. And one of the biggest differences was we said, let's get out of Brisbane and, you know, go on a bit of a sort of recording vacation. So we went to Castlemaine, Victoria, or Castlemaine as the locals call it.
Yeah.
And we recorded at an awesome studio there called Sound Recordings, which is a completely analog studio. So nearly all the album was tracked live by the vocals, which I did back in Brisbane with Jen. And we did it to a four-track machine, which meant, you know, we had to do so much kind of preparation and thinking about, you know, how we were actually going to fit the parts on the tape. It was like a really great challenge for us, and it has made it sound pretty different. But I think it's the ballpark record.
Yeah,
you know?
It was the most fun I'd ever had recording. It was such an incredible experience.
And is the analog thing that made a big difference to that?
Yeah, I think so, because you have to play right and play well and know what everyone's going to do before you play, because you can't go back and fix something. You just have to get it all, you know, all in one go. And so everyone has to work together as this amazing ensemble team thing.
Yeah.
And but it was such a beautiful experience to just have all of us there, like staring at each other going like, oh my God, I hope I don't make a mistake. And, you know, I hope this is what's going to sound good. And you don't know if you're going to go into the control room after you do a take and it's going to be all out of whack and the levels are wrong and you've played wrong notes. But yeah, we somehow did it.
It's actually funny on this song, the final take of Nala's Party Anthem, we all went into the studio and the four of us guys were like, yeah, you know, we nailed it, that's the one. And Jen's like, no, I needed to pee the whole time. And I messed up a part. And we were like, no, Jen, it's cool. And then Jen was like, no, I wrecked it.
It was my most stressful experience all week.
Yeah.
And
she burst into tears. And we had to be like, it's all right, Jen.
Don't stress, it's fine. And then I listened to it again and I was like, yeah, okay, it's okay. don't worry about it.
Well, there's such great feedback coming in. Lots of calls. Matt from Newcastle, what did you think?
I thought it was pretty bloody great.
Thank you.
What did you like in particular?
I loved how it was nice and familiar, but it still had, like, it was still different. And I just loved the, like, when you guys, like, pull it away, and it was just good.
That's cool. Thanks so much, Matt.
The Paul Finesse solo.
Yeah. Sarah from Bradbury, what do you reckon?
I thought it was awesome. I had a really crappy day today, and that's just brightened my afternoon.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Cool. Glad we could help.
Continuing the whip around. Andrea and Adelaide, what about you?
Oh, hi. Yeah, I thought it was really awesome as well. We were at the gig on Friday night too, in Adelaide. Yeah, it was just absolutely fantastic. You guys were amazing, as usual.
Did you see a bunch of new stuff there, Andrea?
Yeah, we heard Pariah as well. And that was really good. Mm. But I did just want to ask, actually, you guys normally play a cover at the end of your shows, but we didn't hear a cover this time.
Well, the thing is now there are too many songs to choose from.
We just ran out of time.
We were
lazy.
And, yeah, okay, I'm glad we both said that.
And ever since we covered bloody Bohemian Rhapsody,
there's just nothing that can
just,
really.
Yeah. It was like the final frontier of covers, you know.
Yeah, we'll never do covers.
I saw that one at the Gov as well, and that was definitely very impressive.
Andrew's been to all the shows.
Yes, I've been to all the shows.
Cool, thanks.
Thank
and well, so yeah, you guys are doing shows. You kicked it off in Adelaide, but then Sydney is this Friday at the Oxford Arts Factory, Howler in Melbourne, and then the Zoo in Brisbane on Friday the 13th of May. They're going to be such great sets to do, and look forward to hearing more new music.
Yeah.
Yay.
Do you guys have an idea when the album is going to be ready to go, or are you still...
2016.
Yeah. 20, that'll do.
First, we're going to erase all our social media. Like,
no. I know, we were talking about that today. We're like, maybe we should do that. And we're like, oh, no one would care.
Well, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
Jen Fam, Ballpark Music. You're with Veronica and Lewis on Triple J. We got a text in that said, hey, can you please not play the intro for The Grey Area, or at least warn us? It's so gross.
What, you mean this one?
The Grey Area.
I'd never thought of it being disgusting before.
Me neither. But the...
He does sound creepy, though, now you mention it.
I'm not going to stop me playing. If anything, it's going to spurn me to do it again.
Yeah, we are going to put on some Matt Corby very soon, as well as a new track from Skepta, but we do want to do The Grey Area.
Yeah, because we like to seek the wisdom of the elders every now and again on a variety of issues, but it is budget night. Tonight, the government will be handing down their budget, letting us know what they want to spend money on, what they're going to increase, what they're going to cut. And we thought, well, we don't know what we're doing with money. I got nothing. You know that. But these people have been hanging on to and spending money for a lot longer than we have. So we thought, rather than wait for advice from the politicians, we'd go over their heads to the advice of old people.
The Grey Area.
My name is Ernie. I'm 91 years old.
Mary, and I'm 83.
My name's Ruth Buchanan.
Dale Rothwell.
Yeah, my name's Bill Maddock. I'm 74, last Friday.
What do you think is the best thing you ever spent your money on?
Buying clothes, I think.
You're a very dapper man. How would you describe your style?
Well, just an ordinary young man.
I bought an evening cloak, which is absolutely magnificent.
Do you remember the very first thing that you ever saved up to buy?
Dining room suite.
Dining room suite.
Before that, you weren't married, you just done what you liked to, you know, sort of thing. Oh, a dining room suite, yeah.
Do you remember how much your first salary was?
Yeah, about $8 a week. Not much, is it?
Not these days.
A ward wage roughly was about £10. And when you buy a house, you pay £5 a week off, so you're paying half your wages. And people today get thousands, so they pay about $500 to pay it all. It's the same thing.
What do you like to spend your money on when you go on a bit of a spree?
DVDs, mostly.
What was the last DVD you bought?
The Light Horseman. I only bought it a couple of weeks ago.
Can you tell us about something you spend your money on, but you shouldn't spend your money on it?
I don't smoke, I never have. I don't drink, but my great passion is singing. And I've spent a considerable bit of money getting my voice trained.
Can you sing us something now?
Okay. This is from Cats. Midnight, not a sound from the pavement. Has the moon lost a memory? She is smiling alone in the lamplight. The withered leaves collect at my feet, and the wind begins to moan.
Triple J. On Triple J with Veronica and Lewis.
And Matt Corby's just a few minutes away. But before that, I just wanted to quickly sneak something in, really. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of very big and important things going on today. You know, you're looking at Donald Trump becoming the presidential nominee for the Republican Party. You're looking at the budget. You're looking at Palmer getting out. Big changes. I'd like to talk about something small and irrelevant for a time.
Sure.
Last night I was at a party and got to a situation which I've actually encountered many times before, but we got into a bit of a debate. There was only one phone charger, right? And so everyone was, it was the end of the day and everyone's phones are running a bit low, and so it was a bit of a, you know, shift around game on the charger. And I was deep in the red, and I went over and looked at the phone on there and it was on 30%. And I'm like, am I allowed to take them off? If they're on 30 and I'm on 10, when can I take them off? There was only one charger, and my friend was just like, take it off. They're on 30. Okay. They're in the green. You're in the red.
Take
get out there.
Mm.
And I was like, nah, I got to wait till I get to 50. 50 is an acceptable time for me to take them off.
No way.
And then I had another friend who's like, you cannot take them off until I get to 100. And I went, well, that's just crazy.
Yeah, that is wild.
That's wild. Like, that's just, let's all work together as a team here and stay in green. Do you have a number that you would kick someone off at?
I reckon probably 20.
20, that's pretty low.
Yeah, I'm a real tight ass. Move it on.
Because I can't tell if it says something about you as a person, because part of me has an inkling that the earlier you would kick someone off,
the colder, more heartless person you are.
That's kind of what I was getting at, yeah. So you're 10% more heartless than me.
Okay. And your friend that was all green, Hanji.
Sweet woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Really lovely woman.
0439757555. What do you reckon? But we're talking right now about the appropriate percentage on a phone to be able to take it off the charger to put yours on at a party.
Did I know that we were going to be covering the big topics today? Yes, I did. And here we are. It's a mess, can I say? There are a few people who are just like, oh, it's obvious. It's not obvious. If you can see the text line like we can, there isn't a single person on here who agrees with anyone else, and there are hundreds of opinions.
Yeah. Nick from Brisbane, for example, says, don't be a crumb, Veronica. How are you supposed to Tinder if you're only at 20%? I said take it off at 20. He says 30% minimum. And 40 for your average Aussie champion.
Someone says, come on, Fitty, you heartless bastards. Perfectly acceptable time. Daz also said, such a wing attack move to kick them off the charger.
Yeah.
Everyone kicks someone off the charger at some point.
Mark from Hobart, what do you reckon?
Look, not until you'd be happy to be able to keep your data turned on. Oh, at least 30 or 40.
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me. I'm a 30 guy.
Do you find yourself in this situation a lot, Mark?
Yeah, every day.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people on the text line are like, oh, you guys are lame. You should put your phone on airplane mode when you're at a party.
I'm like,
what? No one does that, do they?
I would say thanks, Granddad, but I don't have any grandparents left, so I don't think my granddad texted in.
That took a weird turn.
It sure did. But let's be honest. The main overriding thing here is the lower number takes priority, but that seems like anarchy to me because if it's like 5 and 10, you guys are just... You're all going down the gurgler.
Adriana from Tullamarine says it's called the percento game. Whoever has the least percent wins the rights to the charger. It's brutal, but it works. Serious business. Hannah, what do you reckon?
Look, guys, I reckon you have to settle it at 55%. Like, you've got a justification there. You're over half. That's it.
Why not just 50?
Look, 51.
we're not haggling. This isn't an auction.
We are haggling.
We are haggling. 51%, that's it.
53.
You've got annoyed. No, okay, we'll settle it. 52%, you've got enough to go about your business, about the rest of the day. Just give us a turn now. I'm on 48% and my soul hurts.
Okay. All right. You know what? 52.
That'll do.
I don't know why. There's no rhyme or reason.
It's Veronica and Lewis.
On Triple J. That's Knife Edge from Matt Corby, who joins us now in the studio.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, good.
Yeah?
Quite good.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get to the big question.
Yes.
You're at a party. Your phone's about to die.
Mm-hmm.
You look over, there's only one charger, one phone on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a certain number of percent. I won't say which, but you're about to die. Your friends are calling. They're trying to come to the party.
Well, you're about to die or your phone's about to die?
Your phone. Okay, you're right. Good. You're good. But you're about to go, Matt, where's the party? And you look over, and at what percentage do you kick their phone off for yours?
Well...
You don't know whose phone it is. You can't tell. You look at, whose phone is this you're saying?
Yeah,
no one
hears
you.
Well, yeah, again, that does take a lot out of it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't... You should probably go to the effort to find out.
You can't. It's a jam. There are hundreds of people. It could take you hours. You've only got 1%. Come on, Matt, make a decision.
I guess anywhere from 30 to 40 is okay.
Okay.
You know, that's safe zone.
That's
depending on how many apps you have open in your phone.
You can't check that. They're blocked.
No,
they're
Oh, that's true. Yeah, okay.
You know? You're trying to add all these excuses to pick a number, Matt.
35, is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, let's go with 35.
Okay.
Yeah, nice, cozy 35.
Right. Interesting.
Lewis likes to judge people according to it now.
Mm. All right.
So consider yourself judged at the very start of this.
Yours is higher than mine, so you've judged in a much better place. Okay.
Hey, it's so nice to have you in here because you were sick last time and you've had to reschedule shows, which is awesome. There's a Sydney show you're doing tonight and then one that's happening in July too.
Yes.
Are you all better?
I am, yeah. I had a brief moment of, 24 hours of pure fear when I had a laryngoscopy and someone told me I needed surgery. I was like, no, that's not good. That's kind of like my year gone. And then I went to someone else for a second opinion who had seen my voice before. And he was like, nah, your voice has always looked like that. It's like, it's just a bit messed up down there. And even the doctor was like, oh, I'm surprised that you can sing like that with your vocal cartilage shaped the way it is. So,
okay.
I don't know. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like it was kind of comical.
That's fine. I know there are a few singers who have unusual vocal cords who have had similar things. I know like Jimmy Barnes has always told that. People are like, you shouldn't be able to sing with your vocal cords. They are a mess.
And it does sound like that a little bit in the most beautiful way possible. Yeah. But. Yeah.
So what happened? You went into lockdown? What happens when that kind of thing?
I just didn't talk for a few days and try not to smoke too much and try to drink only water and get as much sleep as I could and try and stress as little about it as I could. But it was hard. I cancelled the show when people were there, and that was almost, I don't know, that made me feel really horrible as a human being. Like, and I didn't want to be responsible for bringing everyone to a place and disappointing them. So even that was like, it took me a couple of days just to be like, oh, okay, it's fine. Like, you just, if you fail, you kind of fail spectacularly sometimes, and that's all right. Hopefully people will understand. I think people mostly did, which is good.
At any point, did you think of just doing a mime show? just rolling
the
with CD something
on,
else?
Yeah.
Milli Vanilli it.
That would be amazing.
But the reactions we've been seeing from people who have been to your shows are glowing. People are absolutely loving it. The album that you just put out is very, it's a lot more about grooves. It's very sort of chill. How are you finding audiences are reacting and getting into it?
I think I've seen a shift in the kind of people that will come to the shows, which has been pretty interesting. I think people are understanding that everyone evolves, and I'm trying to continuously portray that musically and creatively. So I don't know. Yeah, it's, I can't really explain it because I try not to pay too much attention to, you know, if it's loved or hated too much or what kind of response it's getting. I've just kind of had way more maybe conscious conversations with people sort of post-show or about the album itself and stuff. So I think even that, in a way, that makes me feel kind of validated and that people are understanding what I was trying to say and the kind of thing that I'm trying to do just for this record. So yeah, it's honestly, I feel really good about it. I didn't think I would feel as good about it, but it's been really surprising and lovely, yeah.
That's awesome. Mm. Kate from Melbourne, you were amused by some audience reactions.
Yeah, no, it was really funny. Just so chill and groovy, and you're just sort of chilling out and listening, and then, you know, finish a song and someone screams out, oh, I love you, you know.
and what do you say to that, hey? It's like, yeah, cheers.
Cheers, mate, yeah.
Cheers, mate. Every time, that's all I can say.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty much.
But you love the show, Kate?
Yeah, no, it was great. It was brilliant. Vera Blue killed it too, actually. She was amazing.
Yeah, she can sing.
Yeah, tell us about Vera Blue. How do you know her?
We met at a festival in Dungog, maybe, a while ago. Was it Dungog or was it? I think it was Dungog. Anyway, she's awesome. She's just sort of finding her feet and writing good music, and she can really, really sing, like properly. Like Mariah Carey style, full hit the tea kettle, like notes up the top.
Would you ever do a duet?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, that would be a great idea. I mean, I don't often think to do those things, but I don't know why.
Please do it.
Do it.
Now that I've thought about it, I can't unthink that now, actually.
Ah, all right.
Last time you were speaking to Triple J, you were speaking to Matt and Alex, and you were in Brooklyn. But how are you enjoying being back in Australia?
I like it a lot better here, to be honest. It was, we always seem to follow the winter around when we tour, so everywhere we are, it's freezing cold.
That's the worst idea. Who organised that?
I do know. I'm not going to publicly shame them. It's all right. It toughens us up a bit. So when we come back here, it's just, you hear birds again and the sun and the beaches and I don't know, it's just a little bit calmer here. People are a little bit more friendly.
Where are you?
Actually, Americans live out loud. Like, they're almost culturally, they're so in your face about everything. Like, you know where everyone's at around you in America, basically. Mm. And that's why they work so well in their own country. And then Americans come over to other countries and you're like, oh, shush. You're really loud and obnoxious. But they don't quite understand that people are more passive aggressive here. So.
But particularly because you've been spending time in such quiet places recently in Australia, right? Because you're sort of in Berry and Byron and, you know.
Yeah.
And did you record it or sort of start writing it in Byron or Berry in New South Wales?
I was sort of half an hour out of Byron in a little place called Bulambul, and that was, I was just sort of, I set up a bunch of instruments in that house for 6 months and just played and jammed with some friends and didn't really take any of the writing process too seriously or anything until I moved down to Cronulla again, where I'm from, and spent 6 months there and then was like, okay, cool, I'm ready to record or just write a bunch of songs for an album. And that's when we found that little house in Berry. I was like, that's the jam, let's go. let's go right now. So, yeah, and we stayed there for 2 months and did it.
Yeah, because it seems from the outside, from sort of watching some of the process, that it was a fun album, a recording process, which isn't always the case.
Yeah, super fun. I think through the creative process, there was only ever maximum 3 people present, including me. So even that just makes things really easy. And it's easy for people to, their intentions and all their creative kind of vision to be in line with each other. I think the more people you add, the more you try and please everyone, or people are just even sharing their opinions subconsciously through even body language or just small comments about the music that change the way that you want to think about it or create stuff. So it was easy. It was awesome, like super fun.
Because you played most of the instruments on the album.
For all the demos, it was just me playing stuff. Basically I got half of my band in and they played whatever it is I couldn't quite get to, like, gangster capacity, you know. There's a pretty decent mix of, like, stuff from the Berry recording demos and then stuff from when we recorded in Sing Sing, which is sadly closing down, I heard.
In Melbourne?
Yeah, which is unbelievable. We should try and save Sing Sing. Just, like, put that down on the radio.
That's crazy. I hadn't heard that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't really intend
That's a bit of history.
That. Yeah, it is. It's really sad. And, you know, the guys that run it are incredible. It's a full, proper studio, one of the only ones left in a lot of ways, so... Anyway, sorry.
No, tangent over. When you're sitting there trying to play all the instruments on an album, what's the hardest for you to get your head around?
It just depends. If you have really good rhythms, you can do anything. Even if you've recorded things well to a click, I mean, you can play around with a whole bunch of stuff. And I wanted to spend the longest on the drums, probably because it was the most foreign to me, and I want to get better at those bad boys. So. Even if I got takes right, I would still want to keep playing. It's like, I had a little idea. Let's try this one.
Well, one person that certainly was hanging out with you while you were starting to learn music was Emma. Emma, you went to music class with Matt Corby.
Yeah, I did. So, hi, Matt.
Hi. Is this Emma Johnson?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, hey, man.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, so I went through school with Matt and we did music together. And I just, your music style's changed so much. So it's so cool to hear, like, what you used to be like at school and then, like what you're doing now. But we used to have so much fun in music. Lock yourself in the crack rooms and we do all sorts of
The crack
of
rooms,
fun
not the crack rooms.
Yeah.
I would
lock
myself in the crack rooms.
Yeah, right. Oh, thanks, Emma. And you're going to go see the rescheduled show in July.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Nice to talk to you, Emma.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
Keep seeing what you're doing.
Yeah. I'm just chilling.
So you've got a few more shows left in Australia, playing a show in Sydney tonight, in Perth tomorrow night, and then that rescheduled show later on the year
in
July as well. And then off to the States?
Yes.
What are you going to do before you head off to the States?
Probably go to the dentist because you don't get a lot of opportunities when you're on the road. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, if you have a bad tooth back there and you're on tour, it's like pretty much game over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as pain and...
That's a great tip for young artists.
Always go to the dentist before you go to America.
Well, your teeth look crucial. Beautiful.
Yeah.
You're doing very well as far as I'm concerned. Thanks, Matt Corby. We're bumping in.
Thank you. Cheers.
Veronica, Lewis, Triple J.
You're on Triple J right now with Veronica and Lewis.
And what a time to be alive. The budget came out last night and the budget, you know, it's confusing and dense. So to help us get our heads around it, the complexity of it, we'd like to welcome to the studio Australia's most trusted finance reporter from ABC TV's The Business, Andrew Robertson. Welcome, Andrew.
It's good to be here.
Thank you. Now, a lot of the budget reporting can be pretty tough to get your head around. And last year we asked you to help us out to digest it in a more relatable way, and you explained it as a music festival. Andrew, how different was last year's budget festival to this year's budget festival?
Well, there are some differences. Last year's lineup was reasonably controversial. It made a lot of people angry and ultimately got the promoter sacked. This year, the headliners are much more middle of the road. Let's say Mumford & Sons.
Yeah, right. One thing I noticed in particular was the defence budget. That's increased significantly.
Well, the security's getting updated. You know how security guards try to get you off people's shoulders by shining their torches in your eyes? Now they use drones.
Wow. Well, can you explain why so much money's been invested into roads?
Well, we all want less congestion between stages. You know, if you've been watching Kingswood at one end of the festival and you're piss-bolting through the mud to get to Peking Duck, you don't want to get stuck behind some dickhead taking his time. You want a faster, easier route so that when the bass drops, you're at the duck, Peking.
That makes sense. The government talked a lot about the debt being a budget emergency. Do you think it's still an emergency?
Well, we have got more debt than we used to have, and the government's still promising to get us back into surplus, but these days a surplus is a bit like a Frank Ocean album. It's always been promised but never delivered.
Maybe next year. How are they planning on raising money in this budget then?
Well, let me just say this. If you think a ticket to Splendor's expensive, wait till you buy a packet of durries.
A big question for young people is housing, but what's the government done about that?
Well, put it this way, if you're a young person looking to buy a house, you're a lot like most young people at festivals. Absolutely f***ed. You've got heat stroke from standing in the sun since midday. You've forgotten to eat. You haven't drunk enough water. You've lost your mates. Your phone's out of battery. You're completely and utterly f***ed.
Wow. Good to hear.
Cool.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Always a pleasure. I feel very well informed. It was much more easy to digest.
Anytime, losers.
Triple J with Veronica and Lewis.
Yeah, with Veronica and Lewis. Hope you're pulling up all right after the weekend.
Have you spotted a lot of double man braids?
Oh, isn't the Ron excited? You've had a pretty out there theory about a week ago.
Well, that it's the new man bun.
That the double, you spotted a lot of double braids at Maitland Groove and the Moo. You were like, it's mostly for the ladies. What if it transitioned to the fellas? I went, unlikely, because there's some things you need to jump over, i.e. having long enough hair to start with. But it turns out I was wrong.
Oh, yeah. So, briefly mentioned on Friday, if you spot one, if you see something, say something, send it into the text line. And the text line was just, it had a lot of double man braid come in, a lot of pics. In fact, we've put up a blog if you want to head to the Triple J website, and we'll link to it from our Facebook too. Jasmine from Melbourne, you spotted it?
Yes, I did.
Was it just the one or several?
Actually, there was quite a few, surprisingly.
Oh, yeah, it's happening. It is and what about man bun? Many?
Not done.
Actually, no, not many. There were lots of fros, like big hair, and the man braids.
So you were at Groove in the Moo?
Yeah.
And
yes,
did you interact with the double braider?
Of course, I had to. I had to say something.
And what happened? Like, what sort of character can we expect from a double braider?
He was actually really laid back.
Mm.
I asked if I could get a photo, and he was like, sure. And then after, he popped me up on his shoulders. And I was like, cool.
That's such a great... So we know that they're a friendly type.
Yeah, definitely. Approachable.
Yeah, there's been quite a few texts coming through of people just, like, creeping up to the back and doing, like, a double thumbs up to the braids and then sneaking away. So good on you for getting right in there and respecting the braids.
But the other thing is, like, this is just the double braids that we see. There's a whole lot that are tucked underneath a Legionnaire's hat.
This is true.
Protecting their neck with both a double braid and a flat.
Yeah. And I saw, like, a braid at the top and then it went into a little ponytail. Like, they're getting really creative.
Oh, that's so good. Maybe we need to do, like, a modification to the Legionnaire's hat with just two little slits at the top of the flap so you can pop them out.
You've got to cater for all hairstyles.
Yeah, and then the weight of the braid can keep the flap over your neck. No wind
I think
is getting...
you're onto something.
This is beautiful.
This is brilliant. I like your thinking. Thanks, Jasmine. What do you reckon is the adult skill that no one ever taught you to do? I mean, I have so many.
Yeah.
And I always think about, like, the holes in the education system where it's, like, just the life skill stuff.
Mm.
And I was noticing today there was an article about this New South Wales Advocate for Children and Young People. They've done this study asking 4,000 young people about what they wish they'd been taught at school.
Oh.
And interestingly, these are some of the top things. The young people were concerned about housing, concerned about how to pay their taxes, how do you go about renting, and how do you raise a family?
Oh, that's broad.
Yeah, I know, they're very broad.
First of all, housing, don't worry about it. Your young people will never be able to afford them. That's just cut that right out.
Yeah, for me, though, it was like I specifically remember the first time I filled up a car with petrol, I had no idea how to do it.
Like, how old were you at that point?
A little bit older than you'd think.
Like 12?
No, okay. I was 23. But I hadn't had a need to fill up the car with petrol until that point. And I thought, it's how hard can it be? You just, you pop the thing in the thing and you...
Who was filling up the petrol for you?
My dad. My dad was, if you must get into the...
So you never were in a car?
He had a company card. Anyway, and so I did. It was like a really late skill that no one taught me. I never found out. And eventually the service station people would just came out and were like, oh, sorry, Missy, do you need some help? And I was like, oh, maybe.
But it's also so basic.
No, like, it's not. It has to click in, Lewis.
What do you mean it has to click in? You just have to put it in and then push the only thing on the handle.
If you've never done it before, you don't know that it has to, you feel it kind of, it goes. Otherwise, you could think that you've pressed the button and nothing happens.
Wow, this is a huge revelation for me. I had no idea you were that incompetent.
What's the adult thing that no one ever taught you to do?
Oh, it's actually a bit embarrassing. Yeah. It was tax. Because this is the thing about tax, right? Like, if no one, at no point... in like that transition from being a teenager to being an adult, does someone go, hey, by the way, at the same time every year, you need to do this thing with your
No one
says that.
No.
So years can go by quite easily where you just don't do that because you didn't know you had to. And you hear people talking about tax and you know it's a thing, but then you don't really know when you're supposed to, who do you give it to?
Tara from Morwell, what did you not know how to do?
I didn't know how to cook meat. Like, I don't quite understand how the stove worked in the sense of cooking things on it. Like, you just turn it up full blast, chuck your stuff on there,
yeah,
and then it's done. Like, and then when it looks cooked, it's done. I just didn't understand the concept
of
slowly cooking things.
How did you go about figuring that out?
Oh, well, when I was living on my own for the first time, I had to call, like, my friends. And just be like, how does this work? Like, I have a base of steak, I put it on, I turn the heat up high, because obviously if you want things cooked, you turn it up hot, right? I didn't understand. I didn't understand the concept of it, or oven cooking. How does that work?
Quite seriously, me and some friends that I know had, like, a class. That there were a few people who were exactly the same problem. They're like, we don't know how to cook meat. And a friend of mine who is a chef was just like, everyone come round to my house, and one night I'm just going to show you all how to cook meat. And it was a really nice time.
Yeah, because some things are different. Like sausages, you can put on high, but chicken.
It's a crazy world out there.
Just become a vegetarian.
Emma from Canberra, what did you not know how to do, and just had to work your way through it?
Along similar lines to that, I wasn't 100% sure how to get the pip out of an avocado. I didn't realize there was a special technique to doing that. And I thought it was just like you hold it in the palm of your hand, shove the knife straight into it. That doesn't end well.
Yeah, sure. And then hang on, Lewis is thinking, it very much seems like Lewis is wondering if he doesn't.
No. But I kind of, with something like that, like you can puzzle it out, you know, like you can always get it out at some point,
it's
right?
It's embarrassing, though, that you go, never watched my parents, so I don't know or whatever.
Well, yeah, and I mean, my mom obviously saw me slice half my finger, so she was like, hey, maybe I should have taught my daughter how to take it out originally.
Yeah.
She was a bit younger.
I mean, avocado class could take off.
It could. I mean, it's dangerous.
Yeah, and Glenn from Melbourne, what did you not learn how to do?
Not really how to look after my car. My oil was running low, and I rang my dad and asked, what do I do? And he said, well, fill it up with oil. Okay, yep, no worries. And I knew where to put the oil, but I didn't know fill it up only meant on the dipstick.
Yeah.
So I filled the whole engine up with oil. I bought 1 litre, emptied it. It was really low still, so I got another litre, ended up putting over 6 litres of oil into the engine. And, it blew clouds and clouds of white smoke. That's when I knew something was wrong.
Roadside assistance people must have to be the most patient people in the world. Like, I might have to do some real deep breathing exercises because they would come across stuff like this all the time.
But I say well done to you, Glenn. I thought the end of the story was going to be that you just filled it up with vegetable oil or something. So that's way better than my expectations. Thanks so much.
And every football season, there's a lot of exciting debutants, people who have been working their entire lives to make it to the AFL. But yesterday, there was an incredible first game. A guy called Aaliyah Aaliyah, who played for the Sydney Swans. He was born in a refugee camp in Kenya, and then since in Australia, lived in Perth and Brisbane in Sydney. And it was an incredible game and an incredible win. And we're very stoked to have him on the phone. Aaliyah Aaliyah, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Congratulations on your first game and a win.
Thank you. I mean, definitely hard fought win, but we're definitely happy with the win.
It looked like you had such a fun group of supporters. Like 50 people came across from Perth, is that right?
Yeah, I think it was around 50, yeah. Family, friends, and it was definitely good to have them there supporting me on my first game.
Did you have a lot of people sort of hitting you up for tickets?
Yeah, I mean, when I found out, I gave Mum a call and my brother, and ever since then, you know, there's been a few people calling, asking for tickets. I sort of had to turn off my phone a couple of days before the game. Just, it was going off with text messages and stuff like that. Just really wanted to focus on the game. But it was definitely good to have the family and friends up there from Brisbane and Perth.
Did your family follow AFL before you started to get involved?
No, I'm not really. I think my brothers sort of did when I was playing, but Mum still doesn't really understand the game. She's sort of getting her head around it. But she says she loved watching me out there. I think it might be her third time watching me play. So she was, it was really good to have her there because she doesn't watch too many games of mine.
So having not been born in Australia, when was the first time you touched a football?
Touched an AFL football?
Yeah.
Probably would have been under 16 when I started playing at Aspley Hornets, which is a club over in Brisbane. And that's where I suppose it all started. And well, I wasn't too good at footy. I was more used to the round ball. And because growing up, the only sport I knew was soccer. So it was definitely a hard sport to take up. But, you know, I love challenges. So, you know, I didn't mind running around and also watching Nick Nannini take a hanger sort of. Got me over the line. So
awesome. Yeah, so you grew up in Kenya.
Yeah. So I was there till I was about 8 years old, and the family decided to move here just to, you know, get some education, you know, better life. And I've been here ever since then. I haven't had time to go back home.
Do you think anyone sort of back in Kenya knows much about AFL?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, Mum chats to, you know, she chats to her brothers and that back home, but I don't think no one knows AFL there. So hopefully when I do go back, I'll take a couple of footies, a couple of boots, and introduce them to the game.
Do you think that there'll be, you know, you've inspired other people in the Sudanese Australian community to start playing footy more?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, ever since Madjack made it, he sort of inspired me. You know, seeing him make it, I thought I told myself, you know, if he can do it, you know, why can't I do it? And I suppose, you know, me making my debut, I've hoped that I've, you know, made an influence on younger kids who, you know, want to play sport and, you know, to give footy a crack and make it. Because I know there's kids out there that are trying footy go, because me, Magic, and, you know, a few other Sudanese have got on the list now. So, you know, I know over here in Sydney there's a massive African community out in Western Sydney, and I've gone out there a few times to go have a chat to them, and they're definitely into their footy, and you know, some of them really want to make it, and you know, I suppose we just have to work hard and do the best they can, I suppose.
Well, Aaliyah Aaliyah from the Sydney Swans, thanks so much for taking the time to chat to us, and all the best for the rest of the season. Congrats on the first game.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Aaliyah.
Humans have always wondered what the future will hold.
Geopolitical turmoil.
Some believe it will be a utopia.
Hoverboards. Free real estate.
Others that humanity faces destruction.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow.
Oh, yes, welcome to the world of tomorrow, where we look into the future, the crystal ball, and wonder what could be, what will be. Who am I? And that is why we are joined by aspiring futurist of the future, Alex Lee. Welcome back,
hey.
Alex.
Hey, how's your toe?
It's better, I think.
Last week you were saying there was stabbing pain. You didn't know why.
Yeah, and then everyone on the text line told me I had gout. So thanks, everyone. I actually was so concerned I had to ask my doctor whether I had gout. He was like, only old men get that.
Yeah, sure. Oh, no, that's so not we'll true.
See. I know a young person with gout, but let's not get stuck on gout.
Will you get gout in the future? Who could say? Yeah, last week we talked about the future of transport. This was one particularly exciting idea.
Sewers. We've got them. They go everywhere.
Yeah.
Why not redesign bathrooms, make our toilets a little bigger, and then have these like hermetically sealed pods that we all jump into, and then we just use the sewer system to travel to each other's houses.
Yes!
Oh, everyone has a bathroom. You could go literally anywhere.
A great suggestion.
I hope if there are any investors out there that they could just send a couple of dollars my way and I'll get them started.
You set the bar pretty high on sewer pods, hermetically sealed sewer pods. Can you give us a little tease about which element you're going to be investigating the future of this week?
Okay. Why don't I just ask you, are you a bit hungry?
I am a little bit hungry.
You a bit peckish?
Mm. I'm a wee bit peckish.
Slightly. It's always at this time of the day.
Interesting.
Okay. I feel like I'm pretty sure what you're going to be discussing.
Was that a cryptic it enough?
The future of food. You want to talk about food this time
around?
Yeah,
you guessed it.
It was a good clue, but we got it. You put on our detective caps and we puzzled that one out. So what do we know about food currently and where it's going?
Well, food right now, we waste a lot of it, right?
Mm.
We throw it out because it's not pretty enough and we're running out of it.
Mm.
So we've got to figure something out for the future.
Absolutely.
And here's my solution.
Yeah.
If you think about it, how many meals that you eat a day do you really enjoy? Or do you just eat them because you need to put food in your body to make it work?
Yeah, one out of three I really enjoy.
Same. Well, here's what I'm thinking. I think we should just start eating baby food for most of the day. Oh. You know, like the baby food that comes in those little squeezy satchels?
Yeah, there were a lot of those at Groove and the Moo Festival.
Really?
I think without so much of the baby food left in them. Let's say no more of that.
Okay.
Oh, I see.
So all the food that we waste that's not pretty enough, blend that down, give it to the people. Mm. Have the government give you a couple sachets a day and then you can just spend one meal a day just really nailing it. Just like making a delicious dinner because you've been thinking about it all day and you've been eating your sludge.
I like the fact that somehow in your future too it became government-issued sludge. Like somehow in the next 10 years we will also be totally run by some sort of totalitarian dictator who gives us our sludge.
There'll be one big pipe in the town square and we all bring our sachets to the pipe to refill.
Please, sir, can I have some sludge? Because I imagine it also like dangling from a thing that we would walk around like a walker. And it would be like one of those things that have, you know, water or urine in them.
Yeah, or like instead of the water in Mad Max, it's just sludge.
Wow.
Just a sludge fountain.
Jeez, okay. I was excited about the future of food. Now I'm just disturbed about the future of the world.
Yeah, but you get one meal. You get that one delicious meal, don't
forget.
Okay,
yep.
That's
is that government issued too? Or?
No,
okay.
That's all on you.
All right, what else is happening in the future of food?
Okay, in 20 years, we're going to run out of crops. And
Jesus, this is dark, Alex.
Yeah, I know. But this is life. You gotta be ready to confront the challenges of the future in my job.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Because it's so inefficient because we grow crops and then the animals eat those crops. So what we have to do is teach the animals to grow their own crops. All cows do all day, sit around eating grass, sheep, the same.
They are lazy, come to think of it.
Do you think they will be aware that they're plumping themselves up for our benefit? Like eventually they'll learn.
They're pretty dumb.
They
might get smarter in the future. Animals is a different day.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I love animals, animal farmers.
Animal
That's strong.
Farmers. And then, you know, give us more time to prepare our one meal a day.
Mm.
And then everyone talks about that we're going to be having to eat insects in the future, right? Like it's just inevitable.
Yep.
That scientists are looking into it because they're really high in protein. There's lots of them. But there's something really unsatisfying about eating, you know, such a small thing.
Mm.
It doesn't feel like a meal. It just feels like a little snack.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we have to breed them to be meat-sized.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Giant slugs.
Slugs, yeah, or like locusts.
Oh, yeah, that seems like a great idea for the world.
Yeah.
You know those things that completely destroy livelihoods? Mm-hmm. How about we make them bigger?
Yeah. Okay, I think that's not such a bad idea.
That's very Starship Troopers. I think we might be really enhancing our own demise on that one.
Yeah.
Are we having to feed them to make them bigger with food that we could have otherwise eaten, though?
Mm. Are they feeding on our cows now?
Yeah.
Look, otherwise we could just, you know, bring back dinosaurs and eat them.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Once the
locusts get so big, we bring in the dinosaurs to eat
right.
the locusts.
Teach the locusts, the giant locusts,
then eventually
their real place in the world.
We bring in the meteorite to get rid of the dinosaurs.
Easy.
Human time.
All right. Well, Sludge, Animal Farm, Ming, which George Orwell sort of saw coming.
They did talk. They did organise themselves in a way.
Yeah. And locusts.
Yep.
Let's make it
giant
happen.
Giant locusts.
It is.
The world of tomorrow.
Whether you like it or not.
You're with Veronica and Lewis, and I don't know what you were doing when you were 14. I was always like impressed if I could manage to like get myself on a train.
You were probably doing yoga, not allowed to watch TV.
All right, fine. Yeah, I grew up in a weirdo commune. What of it? But it was definitely not as exciting as what Jade Hameister was doing. She, at 14 years old, has just become the youngest person to ski to the North Pole. How you doing, Jade?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, great. Tell us about your crazy adventure, the nitty-gritty. How many, like, K a day were you doing?
So our goal for each day was 12.5 Ks, and overall, in 11 days, we covered 150 kilometres.
That's wow. pretty impressive. And you hadn't done much cross-country skiing before that?
No, I'm not a skier.
So what, like, possessed you to do this at the very start?
Well, our family has been pretty adventurous, and I think adventure's always been kind of something that I've loved. And my family and I trekked to Everest Base Camp when I was 12, my brother was 10, and we were trekking with some pretty amazing people, and one of those people was a lady called Villa, and she'd skied to the South Pole solo, and I thought she was absolutely incredible and inspiring, and I think she was the one who kind of inspired me to start thinking about my own polar journey.
Yeah, wow. Tell us, what was the hardest part, do you think, of the journey recently?
It might sound a bit silly, but going to the toilet.
Oh, okay, right. So it's very practical.
Yes, yeah. And definitely harder for a girl.
So it's so cold, is that why?
Yes, yeah.
Mm. What do you...
Do you want to get into... Let's not do that.
Okay.
How cold does it get, Jade?
I think the coldest temperatures that we experienced were minus 30.
Hell.
Jesus. And is that while you're, like, actually trekking, or do you just sort of hole up and hide in a tent?
No, that would be while we're moving.
Wow.
So what are the circumstances? You're carrying a pack, you put up a tent every night and go to bed at 5 or something?
So we start our day at almost 9 o'clock and then we're skiing for about 6 or 7 hours, I think we were, and like on skis, kind of cross-country skiing and then pulling a sled behind us. We're using like a harness.
And when you got to the North Pole, like what's there?
Nothing is there because it keeps drifting on the sea ice. So all it is ice.
Did you have any weird run-ins with animals?
No, we didn't see polar bears, but we saw polar bear footprints, which was pretty cool.
Oh, that's
enough.
That's probably better,
yes.
I reckon.
Yeah.
You do have a pretty incredible Instagram, which we've been flicking through. One of the weirder pictures is that you met Rod Stewart. Can you tell us about that?
He's not actually Rod Stewart. He's just a bus driver in Longyearbyen that looks like Rod Stewart.
No way! It definitely looks like Rod Stewart.
It's crazy, yeah.
Okay. Did you even know what Rod Stewart looked like?
A little bit, yeah.
All right, well, that sort of ruins the plan to play Rod Stewart right now, but we'll do it anyway.
Let's just play something that sounds almost identical to Rod Stewart.
All right, well, a language warning for this. It's ASAP Rocky Every Day featuring a bus driver that looks like Rod Stewart. We'll be back with Jade after this.
Every day I spend my time drinking wine, feeling fine.
It's ASAP Rocky with Every Day. Featuring Miguel, Rod Stewart, Rod Stewart, I mean, it was a very topical song because I thought that Jade, who is a guest in the studio, had had a photo with Rod Stewart. Turns out on Instagram it was just a bus driver that looked like Rod Stewart.
But the hair is amazing. It's very faithful. Like, he clearly knew what he was doing. No man accidentally looks that much like Rod Stewart.
Oh, yeah. He was gagging for it. For people to take a photo like that. Jade is a 14-year-old from Melbourne who has become the youngest person in history to ski to the North Pole, which is so incredible. Tell us about the training that you did in the lead up.
So we were training for just over a year, and we were doing things like CrossFit to build like strength and endurance and put body mass on. We're also doing tire pulling with the harnesses that we would use on the trip, on like beaches and in the backyard and up at the 1,000 steps. And we also had a couple of sessions at the Melbourne Altitude Training Room just for endurance, where we'd sit on the spin bikes for like an hour. And then last year we did a training camp in New Zealand where we spent 5 days on the Tasman Glacier kind of learning the basics.
That's crazy. What happens to school in this time?
Well, I've been busy like now catching up with a lot of work, but I was doing a little bit over in hotels and stuff in Longyearbyen.
Right. And when you say you're on a glacier learning the basics, I'm sure they're not basic to someone like me. What are the basics?
Well, first learning how to cross-country ski, because that's new. And then, well, not for this trip, but we're learning how to get ourselves out of crevasses, which will be for Greenland and South Pole.
Yeah, wow. Do you just avoid watching all movies where disasters happen to people cross-country skiing? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But you've been back a little while and you've started to train again now. What are you training for?
So right now we have started training for the Greenland crossing, which will be in April next year. It would take us, I think, around 30 days and it will be 540 kilometres.
Wow. And so you want to eventually do the 3 major polar crossings, right?
Yes, well, hopefully.
So, and that is the North Pole, the South Pole, and a trip across Greenland.
Yes, yeah.
Do you reckon you'll ever want to do that sort of stuff by yourself?
Well, not right now. Mm. Not at my age.
I mean, I'm not encouraging it, by the way. That wasn't me going like, do it.
Do you have like a younger sibling that will possibly try to trump you at being the youngest at all these things?
Well, I have a younger brother, but he said that he would like to experience it for one day, but then he'd like to be back at home.
Lazy. Yeah.
I can relate.
Awesome. Well, so lovely to chat to you, Jade. Thank you for coming by the studio and good luck for the rest of your adventures.
Thank you.
You're with Veronica and Lewis, and we're joined in the studio by an award winner. She won the Director's Choice Award for True Australian Patriots. It's Anne Bloody Edmonds.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, Edo. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
What a great time. You were nominated for 2 separate awards again. You're bored of awards.
Yeah, man. I don't want them. No, I love it. Got a massive ego.
Run out of awards dresses to wear.
Yeah.
Constantly cycling through them.
The glamour of Australian Comedy Awards.
They are glamorous,
but
yeah.
Because you were nominated for the Barry in Melbourne, which is the big one, really. Mm-hmm. And you got to meet Barry Humphries.
I know. What an amazing thing. Like, I genuinely was overwhelmed and speechless when I met him. And he said, I walked up onto stage and he like put out his hand. He's like, I'm Barry Humphries. And I just looked at him and paused and just looked him in the eye and just went, your hero. And then everyone just went, like, we both just went quiet and he went, yes.
So did you already know a lot about him, or did you know you were going to meet him so you quickly brushed up?
No, I knew. Obviously, I'd been watching Dame Edna my whole life. Yes. And then I've also read his autobiographies and, I knew heaps about him. Massive fan. And he's still so sharp. He did some stand-up at the awards ceremony, spot on. Like, his timing is impeccable. And he hasn't lost, like, he's quite old now, but he's still sharp.
Yeah, right. It is weird when you know, like, too much about someone like that. I auditioned for the Molly Meldrum television.
Yeah,
I didn't get the role, obviously. It was to be one of Molly's girlfriends. And I researched Molly heaps in the lead up and then didn't get it. So I have all this Molly information about, like, why his house looks like Egypt and all these, like, obsessions that he had and stuff.
Why does his house look like Egypt?
Because he's obsessed with Egypt.
Is he? Egypt.
Yeah. He used to visit all the time. He's got, like, pyramids in his house and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, just look him up on Wikipedia. It's fascinating.
Yeah, right.
I'm really nervous to meet him now because I know too much.
Yeah.
And I'm excited by him too. I would say your hero as well if I met him.
Your hero.
But the name of your show, True Australian Patriots, people might have seen on the internet, done the rounds on YouTube and on Facebook.
Yes.
It can be deceiving.
Yes.
Can't it?
Well, I mean, our intention was to imitate real patriot groups as a way of making fun of them. So our videos and their videos, there's not much difference between them. So often we do get people thinking it's real, and it's really interesting because they're abusing us for being patriots, which you agree with.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm going to kick your head in. You're like, yeah, you should, because I don't think anyone should kick anyone's head in.
But you're getting people who are anti-extreme right-wing going, you're too right-wing, you guys are Nazis.
Yeah, I'm
going
to get
you.
And I'm like, yeah, that's fair enough, but don't get me as well. If you see me in the street, I'm not. And, you know, I was sitting in a cafe once and a guy came up to me and he was, like, looking at me for ages and he walked over and he was like, have you been making videos, and pointed at me? And I was like, oh, well, here it is. I'm done. And I was like, yes. And he's like, oh, they're funny ass. Oh, thank God.
Because you must have interesting people come to your show, because yours was really late at night too. And for the Sydney Comedy Festival, you're doing the same. It's a real late night show. It must be the vibe of people are a bit jazzed already.
Yeah, there's a little bit of already been drinking kind of. It's a late night show, so it's quite loose. There's nudity and a lot of swearing. So, yeah, that's the kind of vibe of the thing, is a bit loose and bit out there, this show.
Well, if you get people coming to, like, maybe thinking that you're real online, do you ever get people thinking that you're real and arriving at the show?
In Brisbane we did have that. Yes, we did have people coming that thought it was real and then were very confused. I think they thought they were going to a rally or something, and then they were like, oh, hang on.
Hopefully at the Performing Arts Centre.
Yeah. I don't know how they could get that. Like, it was at the Powerhouse in Brisbane. It's the most artsy venue.
Yeah.
It's like, nah, I would have thought they might have thought it didn't add up, but there they were.
I'm sure they enjoyed the nudity.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was something in it for everyone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, everyone loves tits.
You're with Veronica and Lewis this afternoon. You're also with Anne Edmonds, comedian, Veronica and Lewis. What we're going with?
Oh, yeah, you're the third member, the silent one.
Yeah, I'm Anne.
It's surprising the amount of times we get texts saying it sounds like we are saying Veronica and Lewis.
Yeah, well, I'm on the payroll, but I just never speak.
On that sweet ABC cash.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Well done, too.
So I have to do comedy at night.
Yeah. Oh, God. I've got to do something. But what's been happening with you? Because you've had a stressful time, been relaxing, getting away.
Well, my favourite relaxation strategy is I'm obsessed with hot springs at the moment.
Where do you even get hot springs?
Well, in Victoria, there's quite a few. There's Daylesford, for example.
Oh, yes.
But there's these deluxe ones, apparently, in Rye, which is down in Victoria, like these open-air hot springs that I went to with another comic, Damien, who's in the Patriots show, actually. And we tried to relax, but I don't want to be racist, but...
Here it goes.
What's going on with British people?
Mm.
There were signs everywhere at these hot springs. This is a quiet relaxation zone, so quiet, please. It's just like every spa you went into, there was 8 Brits just sitting there going, oh, you were blind last night. How blind were you? Rolling around the floor. How blind was he? Yeah, like just. And then one of them was like, so we got out of that one, moved to another one, and then the next one, the woman was like, I reckon it's just full of dead skin in here. Oh, dead skin. See that? That's definitely. And like, we'd hop out of that one and go to another one. There's another Brit just going, oh, blind.
Yeah. But you realise that that's what everyone thinks about Australians in every other country?
I guess so. Which is so true, actually.
Yeah,
like, it's nothing worse than being overseas and seeing an Australian that's a real dick and just being ashamed.
Just naked in a fountain. Like, oh, look at me, I'm a bloody fountain, and pissing everywhere.
I remember once being, because I lived in Italy for a bit and I hadn't heard an Australian accent for a while. I was walking down the main street of the town I was living in and I genuinely heard someone go, oi, Darren!
Get out of it.
And I was like thrown into another like time zone, and I looked over and there's just like this Bogan family, and a kid was like trying to get into the fountain, like the ancient Roman fountain.
We should have that on our passports stamped somewhere. Oi, Darren, get out of it. And you should have to say it every time you come back into customs.
So you were a small Italian girl for some time in your life.
My major in uni was Italian. I did an arts degree, which is supposed to be 3 years. It took me 5.
Okay.
Because I kept failing on purpose. I'd like choose to fail rather than do the assignment. Anyway, then I discovered Italian, and then I ended up majoring in it and studying Italian.
Yeah,
in Italy of all places.
That sounds lovely. Yeah.
Choosing to fail is a really fun option and a great party option until you realise that you still have to pay for it.
Well, this is what I didn't realise because I was so immature. I didn't realise that I was going to have to pay for it down the track. I was like, this is all free and fun. Why would I do the assignment? I'll just fail it. And then a few years later when I became an adult and I got my hex debt, I'm like, what were you doing?
Yeah.
Just $500 fails here and there.
The trick is never earning enough so that you have to pay your hex. That's what my grandma did. She studied later in life and then never earned money.
I was going to say, they didn't have hex when your grandmother was around.
What a bonanza.
But there was a magical time where you could just run away overseas and never come back.
Yeah.
So you could have stayed in Italy, a little Italian girl.
Yeah. Get out of it.
Doing the real Italian patriots.
Awesome. Well, True Australian Patriots will be at Giant Dwarf Theatre this Saturday night for one show only in Sydney if you're around. But otherwise, Anne Edmonds is doing That's Entertainment tonight at Giant Dwarf Theatre. And also tomorrow night. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Veronica, Lewis, Triple J.